Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered. Super real.
Hey, I'm Julian Morgans, and you're listening to What It Was Like, the show that asks people who have lived through big, dramatic events what it was like. Hey, and welcome to the show. If you're new here, it's great to have you. And if you're old here, well, it's just nice to have you back. Before we start today, before we properly start, I want to do two things. And first up, I just want to say thanks. So something that's really nice that's happened over the last few weeks is that more people started to listen to our show. We started up, I think it was early 2022. And, you know, when you start a show, like a brand new show, you get a couple of listens and you're like, oh, it's growing. You know, that's exciting, but it's not exactly economically sustainable. It's, you know, it's not like a full-time job. I'd probably describe it as like a bit of a hobby, a bit of a side hustle kind of thing. But we've started to get a bit more traction. We're just getting more listens. I'll just tell you, we're getting probably a couple of thousand every day. And it's suddenly seeming like a thing. Like, this is my job. I'm suddenly just doing this full time. And I love that, by the way. I really love doing this show. I love making podcasts. I love talking to people, creating stories, finding stories. So just by listening, well, specifically by listening to our ads, you've made that possible. So thank you. Really, thank you. The second thing I want to do is introduce myself. And why? Why would I want to introduce myself? You know, I kind of do. I start every show with, hi, I'm Julian Morgan. So you know who I am. But here's my thinking, right? Every time I listen to a new podcast, I'm like, okay, I like this. But who's this host? Like, who even is this guy? And what credentials do they have? What authority do they have to deliver this story into my ears? So I just thought I'd cover it off. I'm Julian Morgans. I live in Melbourne, Australia, and I guess my authority is that I've been a journalist for about 10 years. I was editor of Vice for a long time, and I used to have another show, another podcast called Extremes. Some of you might know it. But when I left Vice, I left that behind, and I created this show. I should say we, actually. My business partner and producer, Rachel Tuffery, we created this show. So it's not a big team. There's two of us. We've got a guy who helps out with the edit as well. So yeah, that's me. That's Rachel. That's how this show came about. Now, let's do a story. Today, we're going to talk about the making of the 1997 mega blockbuster Titanic. Because everyone knows that movie, right? And we all know it was a huge success. It grossed almost $2 billion at the global box office, which made it the highest grossing film ever at that time. But here's something that you probably don't know. And it's that Titanic was one of the most over-budget, over-schedule, and generally mishap-ridden film shoots in Hollywood history. So to illustrate that, here's some facts. So Titanic originally had a budget of $125 million. That's what the production company, 20th Century Fox, that's what they gave to James Cameron to make the film. But they blew past that really quickly. And it eventually landed a little bit over $200 million, which made it the most expensive film ever made at the time. And the result of that was that 20th Century Fox were freaking out. The executives were really worried that if the film was anything less than a huge hit, it would massively affect them financially. There was some concern that it could actually tank, like literally sink, ironically sink the film studio. And that motivated them to send an executive down to Mexico, where they were shooting a lot of the scenes, to talk to James Cameron into trying to cut costs. And the story goes that James Cameron threw a tantrum and he quit. He just walked off the set and had to be cajoled back into finishing the movie. Now, while researching this story, I've been reading industry press, like Hollywood industry press that was published around 96, 97. There was a lot of journalists in that period who were relishing how much 20th Century Fox were putting themselves out on the line. So Newsweek published a now famous headline that actually read, 20th Century Fox, glob, glob, glob. Kind of funny, kind of cutting. Variety, you know, Variety magazine, they actually had a daily Titanic watch calendar on their front page, and they had the 20th Century Fox logo over the top of a ship that was just sinking slightly more every day. Now, that was the studio side of things, but the actors and the crew struggled too. So Kate Winslet described the shoot to the LA Times as an ordeal, and she talks about how she nearly drowned on set. And I'm just going to read a paragraph from the article. Winslet and her co-star, Leonardo DiCaprio, were dashing along the deck of the ship, pursued by a giant rushing wave, only to find themselves trapped by a closed gate. They opened it, but a long, heavy coat she was wearing snagged on the gate, and she was submerged between the rising waters. I had to sort of shimmy out of the coat to get free, she recalls. I had no breath left. I thought I'd burst. And James Cameron just said, yeah, okay. Let's go again. That was his attitude. I didn't want to be a wimp, so I didn't complain. And that's another huge part of this story. Okay, so James Cameron, legendary film director, everyone knows the name. And the reason for that is James Cameron is kind of a freak. Of the four highest grossing films of all time, James Cameron has written and directed three of them. Okay, that's Avatar 1, Avatar 2, and Titanic in fourth place. He's also on the board at NASA, or he was for a while. He literally designs and pilots submersibles to go and explore the lowest points in the Earth's crust. And then he somehow got this ability to make just the world's most popular film, just time and time again. So, you know, there's a lot to admire there. But apparently he's just an absolute maniac to work for. Everyone in Hollywood calls him Jim. Okay, our guest today, you'll hear him say Jim Cameron a lot. But from an outsider perspective, for me, just a regular civilian, we all know him as James Cameron. But yeah, here's what Kate Winslet said about him. He has a temper like you wouldn't believe. As it was, the actors got off lightly. I think Jim knew that he couldn't shout at us the way that he did to his crew because our performances wouldn't be any good. So that's all the background to today's episode. Shooting Titanic was incredibly punishing, and that's been well documented. But here's a little story that somehow flew under the radar. The thing is that at the very start of the shoot, somebody spiked the crew's food with a powerful hallucinogenic drug called PCP, and about 40 members of the cast and crew ended up in hospital. Now, I said the drug was called PCP. PCP stands for phenylcyclohexylpiperidine, and yeah, it's a miracle I got that out. But all you need to know really is that it's quite similar to ketamine, like the molecule is quite similar to ketamine. And it has a similar effect. So I've never tried it, but reports online say that it typically slows down time. It's got like this time dilation effect, and it makes people feel as though they're living in a ridiculous dream. The other thing that I want to cover off is that this event happened in Nova Scotia in Canada, and it was right at the start of the shoot when they were working on some of the film's very first opening sequences. You might remember that Titanic actually opens in the modern era, in the 90s, with a bunch of treasure hunters led by Bill Paxton. They're trying to find the heart of the ocean, which was the jewel. You remember Kate Winslet's character had this necklace. And yeah, as an old woman, she tells this story of how she met Leo's character, Jack Dawson, and it was while shooting this stuff that the crew had their clam chowder spiked. So no, Kate Winslet, Leonardo DiCaprio, they weren't there, they weren't affected. But Bill Paxton, he actually was there, he was affected, and we'll hear about that. And we're going to hear about it from a guy named Jamie Barber. Now, Jamie Barber worked on Titanic as a first assistant camera operator. I'll just give you his bio. So he grew up in Southern California. His dad was actually in charge of manufacturing film cameras at Panavision. So he got a job as a film loader. And from there, he became a focus puller before he landed a job as Caleb Deschanel's assistant and camera operator. And this is a name you're going to hear a lot today. So Jamie talks a lot about Caleb Deschanel. And all you need to know is that Caleb was originally hired as Titanic's director of photography. And a fun fact, Caleb is also Zoe Deschanel's dad, as in the star of New Girl. Anyway, Jamie is an amazing camera operator, cinematographer, director, and we're very lucky to get him on the show today to talk about what it was like shooting Titanic and what happened when the whole film crew started tripping balls and had to be rushed to the hospital. So, I bring you Jamie Barber. Jamie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Okay, so tell me about the moment that you first saw the Titanic script.
It was, so Caleb had gotten the job to shoot Titanic, and so production had sent the script over to us, and you start reading it and realize that this was an incredible script and it was going to be a hit. I mean, we all knew going in that this was going to be a big movie and that we were working on something that was definitely going to make some money.
How did you know it was going to be a hit? Because here's the thing. James Cameron was famous for sci-fi. He'd done Terminator. He'd done Aliens. These are big action movies. This was the first time he'd turned his hand to period dramas. Why a period drama?
Right. It's funny because Jim, he does understand human emotions and going through the human process. It doesn't matter if it's a period piece or a sci-fi or whatever. The human story is still the human story. Mm. And Jim is a really good storyteller.
I've heard that James Cameron's a pretty hard director to work for in some ways.
Well, it's really fun because Jim, when you're in prep and you're doing all the stuff that you need to do at prep and you're going to dinner and we're all hanging out together, Jim is fantastic. He's very funny, tells great stories, really gregarious human being, and very interesting. When you start shooting, it's Jim's movie only. He's the man. All decisions have to go through him. Caleb, when it comes to the visuals, is very, very controlling as well. So those two were at loggerheads quite often. I mean, even though in pre-production they had lots of conversations, stuff like that, but when it came time to shooting, it was Jim's way or no way. So that's where we began to feel that there was going to be some disruption.
Bit of tension.
Oh, boy, okay. Was there tension.
Okay. So Caleb got signed up to do Titanic. You got the script through him. You got hired. You read the script. It felt like a hit. So you start shooting. Tell me about it.
So we start, the first part of the shooting of the movie, we started at the beginning of the movie. We needed to do it in Nova Scotia only because the ship that we were using, which was being brought over from Europe, was the Keldysh. That is a Russian ship and had originally been a spy ship, so it wasn't allowed in U.S. waters. So the closest place we could really go is up into Nova Scotia, where we could shoot it up there. So we were getting ready. We were finishing up shooting in Nova Scotia. We were actually in Dartmouth, which is right across the bay from Halifax, which is where our docks were and the warehouses that we used for stages. And we were our last night of shooting. We were going to leave then and go back to California. We had a scene to shoot in Malibu before we moved to Mexico for the rest of the movie. And we broke at midnight, and it was our last dinner in Nova Scotia. So we had this big seafood fest and it was great. There was lobster, oysters, and there was seafood chowder. It was really, really good food. So we broke for dinner at midnight, had dinner. And at 1 o'clock in the morning, my Canadian trainee started not feeling very well. And so I went we called the medic over, and they thought it was some sort of allergic reaction maybe to the shellfish. So he was run off to the hospital. I went in to talk to Caleb and to talk to Jim Cameron and tell him that my Canadian trainee was having issues and we would be down a crew member. And Jim called over Josh McLaughlin, who was the first assistant director, and they left. And in hindsight, what I heard was that Jim had gone into the bathroom, put his finger down his throat because he had started not feeling well, and he was trying to induce vomiting so that whatever was in his system would be out. And all of a sudden, at that time, I started feeling a little strange.
When you say strange, what do you mean?
Well, the first thing that happens is my arm started going numb, and then the world begins to tunnel in a little bit and gets a little slow. Like when you start walking, you feel like you're walking a little bit in slow motion. And I said, I don't feel all that great. I'm going outside to get some fresh air. So I wandered outside to get some fresh air. And as I'm standing there, we're on a dock now outside the warehouse. More of the crew are coming out saying that they don't feel well and they don't feel well. And eventually, Josh comes out and he's standing on the tailgate of a truck. And he says, okay, the crew that doesn't feel well, I want on one side. The crew that feels okay, I want on the other side, so that we can divide you up and find out how big this problem is. And as he's talking, more of the people that are on the good side that feel okay are moving over to the bad side. And finally, it came to the point where one of the wardrobe people go, oh my God, I'm becoming bad crew, and moved over to the bad side of us. So they loaded us into vans and they drove us to a small hospital in Dartmouth because they knew that there was something wrong with us. And I'll never forget it. Our transportation, the driver who was driving our van, we pull into the parking lot and he puts it in park and he goes, we just made it. And I go, are you okay? He goes, no, I started feeling bad about 2 miles back. We just got here in time. So we get checked in. The emergency room is like panicking because there's like 40 people coming in. And they put us in and the doctor starts to diagnose us. And the only common denominator for everybody was that we had all had the seafood chowder. And so he diagnosed us with paralytic shellfish poisoning, which can be terminal.
What is that?
Certain shellfish eat plankton that's got a neurotoxin in it. And then you eat the shellfish that's got the plankton with the neurotoxin and you absorb the neurotoxin in it. I think the first thing it does is it stops your breathing.
So bad. So very bad.
No, we're told that some of us are going to die.
They told you that. The hospital, the staff said, not all of you are going to walk out tonight.
Yeah, they said, we're worried that because this can be fatal, that some of you will have a problem, will not make it. That's when they started. They set up phones for us and allowed us to call back to wherever we were from, because there wasn't that many of us from California. There was a lot of Canadians.
Yeah. So were you terrified at this point? I mean, how were you?
No, it was pretty panicking. I mean, I called my wife and told her to put the kids on the phone. I had two daughters and they were very little. I told her to wake them up and get them on the phone. And I told them I loved them and told them goodbye.
Oh my God.
Jamie, talked to my wife.
What did your wife say?
She goes, what's going on? What? And I said, there's something wrong. And we've been diagnosed with paralytic shellfish poisoning and some of us may not make it. And she's like, okay. Now, she and I met on a movie called Kindergarten Cop. She was in the film business.
Kindergarten Cop's a real classic. It's an Arnie classic.
So she was in the film business and her cousin was post-production at Fox because Fox was our producing studio. So she called her cousin and tried to get information from them that was more clear than what my information was, but she didn't get any more information. It was crazy.
And I'd just like to point out that if you're getting high, everyone talks about the setting, you know? And if the last thing that you need is a doctor saying, hey, you know how you're sort of hallucinating a little bit and feeling a bit weird? You might die. That is the absolute last thing you need in that headspace.
And it's funny because the symptoms that we were exhibiting at the beginning, the numbness and the tunneling in and the slowness, is all signs of a neurotoxin as well.
Really? Oh, that's so inconvenient.
Yeah, that wasn't real. That was masking the fact that there was something else going on. And also, you're in an emergency room, so it's overhead fluorescent lights. It's really bright. It's linoleum floors, these orange plastic chairs. So one of the things that angel dust causes is massive paranoia, because we noticed that none of us like to be alone. And the other thing that was happening was we were paranoid when we were alone and waiting for the doctor to examine you. You like all of a sudden people would come out of the examine room and want to stay around more people because they were paranoid that being by themselves. So it was later that when we were told it was PCP and that causes paranoia, that they'd at least explained our sort of bizarre behavior. So now when we realized that we were not dying and we were living, one of the last camera assistants to come into the emergency room was Devereaux, who was a Canadian, really fun guy, dreads, really interesting. And he came in he had stayed at the studio because he thought he was okay. And then he started having a delayed reaction. So they rushed him in on the studio into the emergency room. And he gets there. And for some reason, someone had a guitar. And I still don't know where it appeared from. And one of the crew members was playing a guitar. And Devereaux takes the oxygen mask off, sits up on the gurney, and goes, "You know what we need? A conga line." And the guitarist started playing some Caribbean music, and we did a conga line around the emergency room for maybe like 5-10 minutes. And then that's when everyone sort of realized, okay, it's not paralytic shellfish poisoning. We're not going to die. This may be okay. And then the real fun started when they realized that it was some sort of poison in our system. And to counteract poison, they give you liquid charcoal. And so they gave all of us liquid charcoal within this narrow window. They pulled up with this cart, a trolley full of containers of liquid charcoal, and they put a straw in it and you drink it. Well, the problem is that if you drink liquid charcoal, it adheres to whatever poison's in your system, and then your body evacuates it.
Yuck. I see where this is going.
You get the runs.
Yeah.
You get diarrhea.
There's nothing like diarrhea while you're hallucinating.
And you give it to 40 people all at the same time? There's not enough bathrooms in that hospital. I was sitting on a toilet. Someone else was on a sink, and someone's sitting on a trash can. When we left, there wasn't one piece of white porcelain. It was all gray it was horrible.
Pandemonium.
Oh no, it was completely crazy. And then our main producer, John Landau, he had been in the plane flying back from Los Angeles, and he finally caught up to us, and he was like the only stable one of the group, because it was everybody. I mean, it was Cameron, it was Caleb, it was the production manager, who was the highest of the production people until Landau got there. We were all in the same state.
Hey, we're just going to stop here for a quick ad break, but stick around. We'll be right back with more What It Was Like.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I'm curious, because you were saying before that when James Cameron's on a shoot, he's the master of that domain. He is. It's his shoot. So right. In this situation, he's really lost control. So how is he taking that?
He was by himself, literally not taking any control at all at this situation. He was in the same boat we all were.
He was as high as the rest of you.
Yeah, it's just trying to live and make it through as long as he could.
Did he participate in the Conga Line?
No.
Okay.
No, he did not.
I'm curious, what was his response?
Oh, he was laughing. He was with the guy playing guitar. And then there was other people like Caleb and the production manager were discussing how we really knew we were screwed up, was discussing big circle, little circle, you know, what you can control and what you can't control. And so
right. You're doing deep and meaningful philosophical conversations.
Yeah, because you're fucking higher than a kite. Yeah. And then and then someone remembered passing an A&W root beer place, and all of a sudden through the crew they talked about root beer floats, and the next thing you know, everyone wanted root beer floats. So John Landau got someone else in production, and they opened up the fast food place and they brought us all root beer floats.
Oof. How was it?
It was great, because I mean, yeah, when you're completely out of your mind, you're sitting there sipping on a root beer float going, this is the best root beer float I've ever had, man.
Yeah, yeah. And you get all emotional. But, you're like, oh,
everyone did. It was great. Yeah, I love you, dude. And it was funny because one of the crew members had come in, and when we knew that we weren't feeling well, he came in, and when we're standing out at the dock, he goes, are you okay? And I said, no, I'm not okay. I feel really weird. And he goes, I feel really weird too. And then he looked at me and he goes, I'm fucked up. And I go, that's it. I'm fucked up. And I looked at him. I go, what drugs have you taken? And he goes, well, I've taken this, this, and this, and this, and it's none of those. And he goes, you? And I said, well, I've taken all of those. And I've taken this, this, and this, and it's none of those either. So later, I think it was like maybe 6 weeks later that we got the message from the studio that they had tested the food and it had come out. It was PCP.
Yeah.
That's what I immediately called him. I said, Angel dust, dude. And the problem.
It was the one thing I haven't tried.
No, neither one of us had ever tried it. But I will tell you one thing. The seafood chowder was fantastic. So angel dust must be a really good cooking condiment besides being, you know, an animal tranquilizer. Because was the best seafood chowder I've ever had.
Really? It's got a bit of MSG to it.
It's got stuff in it. But how crazy the filmmaking world is. We literally once, like, 8 hours had passed and they all said, you're not going to die. They stood at the door and they said, we still got to finish shooting tomorrow. You know, we got to be back in Los Angeles. We're going to work tonight. And this was like 8 in the morning and they wanted us back at like 8 at night. Man. And we're just like, no, we've just been in a hospital. We've been drugged. This is crazy.
Yeah.
And they said, no.
You had to say goodbye to your children, and then they wanted you to work the next night.
We did. We worked the next night, and we moved from there to Mexico, and Caleb left the picture.
Caleb was out.
Yeah.
Right.
And then once Caleb was gone, I didn't last much longer before I decided I would leave.
Okay. What prompted you to leave?
So a little backstory. So when we were down crew, when we were having our focus problems on the B camera in Nova Scotia, and Jim fired the focus puller, I went to Jim because Jim was the only one who would watch dailies. He watched it completely by himself at lunch. And so Jim and I had a conversation about focus and issues that we had with shooting. And I said, listen, Jim, I know a lot about cameras and lenses. I'm trained to deal with it from my dad being with Panavision and my time at Panavision. I know the difference between when equipment is malfunctioning and when a human being is malfunctioning, and I can see it. I need to see the film.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, you can watch dailies. And so Jim and I would watch dailies together every day. They would bring us lunch. And so it would be just Jim and I. Well, we watched it on a flatbed, and you really can't tell focus on a flatbed. So he would stop and he goes, is that sharp? And I said, yeah, it's sharp, Jim, because you can't really tell. But so he and I had that relationship. So I realized that when Caleb left, I was not going to stay on the movie as my only friend being Jim Cameron, because eventually that's going to bite you in the ass.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So it was my excuse when Caleb left. They said, we'd really like you to stay. And I said, I'll stay for the transition, but I'll be out of here.
Yeah, he reminds me of, in some ways, there's a sort of Elon Musk quality to him. You know, he's a bit of a polymath. He's across every aspect of the film, from the sort of psychological insights of writing a script with a compelling narrative arc to just like the real nuts and bolts of cameras and the mechanics of the thing.
Oh no, he's very much involved with everything. And he is one of the first ones to tell most of the crew that he could do their job because he came up through the crew ranks. I mean, he came up through the art department and he's been hard crew. So he was happy to tell just about everybody that he could do their job. I was lucky enough that when he told me, you know, he started to have that conversation with me, and I go, I'm happy to let you try.
Yeah.
You know, as a focus puller, go ahead, dude. Give it a shot. Because I know you can't do it.
But I guess what I'm saying is that the shoot was punishing. You know, it was hard.
It was very hard, especially when we got to the point, when they got to the point of sinking the ship. And there were definitely some injuries, and it was going way over budget. Yeah. But one of the reasons that you also do it in Mexico is you're not constrained by some of the rules that you're constrained by doing it in the United States and in Hollywood.
Yeah, totally. You can burn through crew members. You can injure people.
So you can do stuff, all sorts of stuff. I was lucky enough. I did a movie called Master and Commander of the Far Side of the World. I was one of the
camera operators. Russell Crowe.
Yes. And in that movie, they to escape from the French ship, the Acheron, they row the boat into a fog bank.
Yeah.
So to make a fog bank here in the United States, it requires, you know, special stuff that has to be water-based. It can't be caustic because you're going to breathe it and all of that. In Mexico, diesel fuel and tires.
Oh, God. Ugh.
But that's, it creates a much better fog bank.
Fantastic fog.
Much better.
Yeah.
And the wind shifted on us at lunch in Master and Commander, and literally we fogged in from Rosarita up to Tijuana.
Wow. Okay, so, all right, so it's a hard shoot. It's a bit of a mess in Halifax. And yet when the movie comes out, it is an immediate, you know, it set world records. It was one of the first movies to gross billions, not millions, but billions.
Yeah, no, it's, you have to, Jim's, you know, the visual effects were fantastic. Jim did an amazing job. The editing was good. The story was great. And the acting was fabulous. I mean, you had some great actors. You know, Leo is brilliant. And that was one of the reasons you were willing to put up with some of the environment that you were in and things that were going on, was because you knew that you were making a movie that was going to be a hit.
Yeah, yeah. So when it came out, knowing what you went through to participate in that film, were you relieved? Did you feel that, like, that awful night in a hospital was all worth it because the film had been such a masterpiece?
I only felt that it was worth it because I was alive.
If you'd been dead, not so
yeah,
worth
if
it.
There, if people had died during that part of it, then no, it would not have been worth it. In almost every big movie that you do, there is some experience that you go through that is crazy, that is just the film business. And while you're going through it, you're miserable and you hate it. But as soon as it's done, you come away and you go, well, I got a really good story now.
Yeah.
But as long as you live, you know, as we have always said, as long as we live through it, you know, because we do things. I mean, one that makes filmmaking interesting is to go do things that are really hard and really stressful on your system and all everything that goes with it. So you do walk away at the end. If it's good, you walk away going, okay, that was worth going through. I'd do it again. Now, I promised myself I wouldn't work with Jim again, but that's another story.
Tell me about, so who put the PCP in the clam chowder? Was someone ever arrested, and why?
No, there was no one. We understand there was no one ever arrested. But so what we understand, when we were on the Keldysh, we were on the Russian research vessel. We were coming in one night. We'd been shooting and we ran out of daylight, and we were coming back into port. And the craft service guy, because there's a craft service gentleman who makes sure that you have food and water and things like that that the caterer doesn't take care of, just snacks and things that we do. So he was smoking a joint, and Jim Cameron caught him and had him fired. So he came by that day to pick up his paycheck. And
okay.
Stopped by and talked, because he was friends with the caterers, and talked to the caterers, talked to the crew, and then left. The next day, when we were after our adventure and we were getting ready to go to work, he ran into one of the crew members outside the hotel in Halifax and asked him how their trip was the night before.
Ooh, I'd say that's rather damning.
That was really damning. And I don't know why the Canadian police, why he wasn't arrested, but because at one point we thought he was arrested and then, you know, like 40 counts of attempted murder or whatever. But
yeah, yeah. Were you pissed off at him? You know, if you had a moment with him, what would you say?
Oh, no, there wouldn't be a lot of talking. Because having had to make that phone call was heartbreaking. I never, ever wanted to have that, to be in that position of, you know, having to say goodbye to my children. That I may not make it to the sunrise.
Yeah, that's awful. I mean, I think I was attracted to this story because everything's big about this story. You know, it's like one of the world's biggest blockbusters. It's a big shoot, and then in the middle of all of this, you have this big weird drug experience. You know, you're prepared to meet your maker. Everything about this story is big, and I think that's very cool. As a headline, it's very cool. But what I'm learning talking to you is that actually it was kind of terrifying, and you wish it hadn't happened.
Oh, no, we all wish it hadn't happened, because it's you never want to go through that. You never want to. Maybe if it had been worked out quickly that we were actually on a drug that wasn't going to kill us. Because also that's the other thing about PCP is the amount of PCP you have to ingest to make it to kill you is huge.
Okay, so you were pretty safe.
Yeah, it's a very... you're just going to be high.
Yeah.
So if we, in hindsight, if we had known that we were just high, then you embrace the high and you go with it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But the fact that you don't know that you're high and you're experiencing it and that they've told you that there's a good possibility you will die, that you don't want people to go through.
That sucks. I mean, we're both in the arts business here, and I've tried some drugs, and I like to think that if I was getting high, I'd be like, this feels like I'm getting high. But of course, if someone tells you, like a doctor, someone tells you, no, you're not getting high. You're experiencing the first signs of death. You know, that would just change. That would reformat the entire experience.
No, that's what it does. It just reformats. And it's a drug that mindset's important. So yeah. once it puts you into that mindset, you're going to travel. You're going to go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
That's the problem with it. Again, if we had, you know, bunch of filmmakers had definitely done some drugs. So yeah. It would have been fine. Would have been happy to go through it.
I heard actually that Bill Paxton sort of smoked some joints to take the edge off.
I've never smoked. When Billy, God rest his soul, when he was alive, I never participated in that with him. We had conversations about things that we have done, but we never actually smoked any weed together. Because I did. I did Next of Kin with Billy as well.
Nice. Well, look, I really just have one question left. And that is, so you're retired from the film business now.
Yeah.
And you had a long career. How does this rank as in terms of like crazy, arduous film business experiences? How does this one rank?
It's right up there with one of my best stories.
not just one of your best stories through work, but one of your best sort of life stories.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, going through that adventure. I mean, people just don't understand how crazy that moment was when it shifted over. 15 minutes ago, we were dying. And the next thing you know, you're doing a conga line through the hospital. And then you've got the run. You know, it became things. But we, you know, you have to, through a career of 40 years of doing crazy stuff, Titanic was definitely up there. You know, it was worth going through it, but it was a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
A lot of alcohol had to be consumed as well.
Yeah, you're gonna need to grease the wheels. Well, Jamie, I'm gonna let you go, but
I hope this was if this was what you were looking for. I mean, I hope
absolutely. Yeah. This is a wild story, and I don't think many people know about it. People know Titanic, they know Leo, they know Kate Winslet. There's a lot of phrases that have made their way into pop culture, but this is a story that for some reason just never quite got out, and I just think it's such a weird, crazy story.
Yeah, no, I think also one. I think it was because it was in Canada and it wasn't like here, and I think. They probably did try to, suppress it as much as they could.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know that James Cameron's spoken about it lots. There was a CBS thing I saw not too long ago where he was talking about it. He recommended that people don't try PCP. He said it was a bit of a shit drug.
It's not the most fun, but as a cooking condiment, it may be really good.
So that's what we learned.
Yes.
All right, Jamie. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and it was a pleasure.
Hey, a quick shout out to my dear friend, Brendan Norris, without whom this episode probably wouldn't have got made. I'd been trying to find someone who would talk about their experience on the Titanic shoot for quite a long time. So thanks, Brendan. You helped me to find Jamie. You helped this episode to get up, and you're awesome. If you've enjoyed today's episode and you're thinking, hey, I've got a story that's pretty cool, something that could work for this show, you know, something interesting but surprising, a little bit unique, please get in touch, hit me up. I'm always looking for story suggestions or feedback or, you know, whatever you got. I'm Julian Morgans on Instagram and Morgans Julian on X. And you know what? We'd love you to follow the show. You know the follow button on whatever your podcast app is? Just press that. We'll be eternally grateful. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. Just a simple 5 stars should do it. You don't even have to overthink it. Today's episode was produced by Rachel Tuffery. It was edited and mixed by Nicholas Feliciano. Jimmy Saunders did our theme music. Our cover art is by Naomi Lee Beveridge. And this whole thing has been a Super Real production.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget?
Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.